Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Congressman Ben Klein, and I want to thank all of you for taking the time to join me for my second coronavirus telephone town hall. Today, we're going to be focusing on small business issues and how the federal government's making resources available to help businesses through this uncertain time. If you'd like to ask a question now or would like to do so at any point throughout this event, please press *3. If you'd like to sign up for my e-newsletter to receive the latest updates from my work in Washington and from across the 6th District, please press *6. While millions of Americans have experienced financial hardship as a result of the coronavirus, small businesses have borne the economic brunt of this pandemic because of social distancing and stay-at-home orders. And while I know these are difficult times, please know that the federal government has made numerous resources available to help small businesses through this crisis. Most recently, Congress passed the CARES Act, which provided over $2 trillion in aid to individuals, small businesses, and hospitals. The legislation created the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP, which has served as a lifeline to thousands of small businesses here in the 6th District. The program has provided nearly $350 billion in forgivable loans to 1.6 million small businesses to help keep their doors open and to help keep workers on payroll. Here in Virginia, as of April 16th, more than 40,000 PPP loans have been processed, totaling nearly $8.7 billion. Aside from the Paycheck Protection Program, businesses may have found relief through the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Emergency Advance or the Employee Retention Tax Credit. The Economic Injury Disaster Loan Emergency Advance, or EIDL, provides up to $10,000 of economic relief to businesses that are currently experiencing temporary difficulties. And the Employee Retention Tax Credit is a fully refundable tax credit for employers equal to 50% of qualified wages, including allocable qualified health plan expenses that eligible employers pay their employees. And a more detailed description of all of these programs can be found by visiting sba.gov. Unfortunately, however, the demand for these programs has exceeded the funding, and the SBA is no longer accepting new loan applications for the PPP and EIDL as of last Friday. We need to increase funding for these programs immediately, and Senate Republicans are working with the administration and with House leaders to inject an additional $250 billion into these programs. American workers must take precedence over any type of partisanship that's undergirding these conversations. And Leader Schumer and Speaker Pelosi, I hope, will stop blocking this effort to provide this additional funding for these important programs. I'd now like to take a moment to introduce my guests who are joining me on the call this afternoon. Virginia's Director of the Small Business Administration, Carl Knobloch, and Delegate Chris Runyon. Mr. Knobloch has been serving as Virginia's SBA District Director since June of 2014. Prior to arriving in our Commonwealth, he served as SBA's District Director for the Western Pennsylvania area for 8 years. And before joining the SBA, Mr. Knobloch owned several small businesses in the manufacturing and service industry and also served as an executive for several innovative startups. Delegate Chris Runyon represents the 25th District in the Virginia House of Delegates, which covers portions of southern Rockingham County, northern Augusta County, and western Albemarle counties. He served in the General Assembly since 2020, just getting elected last November, or November of 2019, to fill the shoes of Delegate Steve Landis, who was elected Clerk of Court in Augusta County. And he and Delegate Runyon currently sits on the Communications, Technology, and Innovation Committee, as well as the Privileges and Elections Committee. Delegate Runyon is a small business owner himself right here in the Shenandoah Valley, and we're glad to have him join us as well. I'd like to thank both Mr. Knobloch and Delegate Runyon for joining me today. I know their insights will be invaluable to the conversation, and I'll give them the opportunity to introduce themselves and make some opening comments here shortly. Please know that if you're unable to ask a question live on this line this afternoon, you'll have the opportunity to leave a voicemail at the end of the event. To ensure that you do receive a written response from me, please leave your name, your telephone number, and your mailing address. And I would like to remind you, if you would like to ask a question, please dial *3 at any point. And to sign up for my weekly e-newsletter, dial *6. We'll be running a few poll questions throughout the event as well. It's a good way for folks on the line to give me an idea of how they feel about some of these issues. The first poll question we'll go ahead and run with is, are federal and state leaders doing enough to publicize the resources that are currently available to help small businesses through this difficult time? Do you think yes, you're getting enough information about resources, press 1. If no, press 2. If you vote now, we'll reveal the results of the poll a little bit later. But before we get started, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Knobloch and Delegate Runyon for any opening remarks or information they'd like to share. Mr. Knobloch, why don't we let you go first? Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Congressman Klein. Truly appreciate being here. One of the things I want to point out, this was unprecedented, the high demand, and this is based on the first time in our history having a nationwide disaster versus what we call typically a regional disaster, like a hurricane, tornado, earthquake, wildfires. This was something totally unique, and I thank Congress for actually identifying the virus as a disaster, which opened up opportunities for some of our programs to be used, and then also newly created programs through the CARES Act that helped through this process. One of the things is that, you know, they talked about the resources and demand during this time. We at the Small Business Administration here in Virginia, typically we're assisting businesses on their life cycle of their business. We typically will educate on disaster, but we don't get involved in the grand scale of it because that's a totally separate division of SBA. But during this unprecedented time, we were actually called in to assist with that. And we did that by basically offering webinars through the initially through the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, and then following on to do the payroll protection. We were doing 4 webinars a day, 5 days a week for 3 weeks total. We had a lot of people enrolled for that, a lot of sellouts. And once again, the challenge was technology. Otherwise, we would have tried to put more on through this process. The other thing is that we understand a lot of challenges people were facing and what they were trying to get assistance in that. And sometimes they didn't feel they were getting cooperation, one, from the Small Business Administration disaster concerning the advance loan up to $10,000, communication-wise, and also at the same time those that are trying to get the payroll protection and feeling their lenders were not being supportive of working with them and through this process. We understand all this, and like I said, we've tried to assist as much as possible. We try to get questions answered as quickly as possible because some people have very unique situations. But through this whole process, I commend Congress for putting the tool out here to give us something. And, yes, there were some quirks with it, but I can tell you during those 2 weeks, there were changes being made on a daily basis to improve it, to make it better. And are there still things that could be done to make it better? Absolutely. And I hope that comes about when eventually the next product comes out with that. But the one thing I want to say is thank you to Congress and also the small businesses who are facing very challenging times through this, how they've been very professional on the phones when they communicate with us as we try to assist them. I know that it's very frustrating, and sometimes you feel like you're alone, but I can tell you honestly in our office, we really feel for you, and we're trying to do everything again to help you. Thank you.
Thank you. Carl, Delegate Runyon, are you on the line?
I am. Congressman, thank you. I would like to, first of all, thank you and your staff for putting this together for our community. And, you know, I think this is a great example of where we are in today. We're all working together. And Director Knobloch, you know, the SBA has gone above and beyond. We're in a part of a time that we never expected to be in. And so through your all's cooperation with banks, with the small business community, Congressman Klein and his office, and Congress overall, and the president, I can see that our small business constituents and our constituents all overall see that people are being responsive, engaged. They're asking for that reassurance, and fortunately, we'll be able to offer those. And in the times that we've had to work together, I really want to commend your staff, Congressman, on working with ours to address those issues that are both at a state and federal level. So I appreciate that. Again, this is a time we're in a tough situation, and we will, as we continue to all work together, we'll achieve those results that our communities know we want. So thank you.
Absolutely. And we appreciate all the work you've been doing down in Richmond, and that Mr. Knobloch's been doing with the SBA to help get these resources out to folks. Well, let's get to some of the questions that we've got. Before we do, just remember, if you want to ask a question, dial *3, and if you want to sign up for our e-newsletter, dial *6. The first question, let's go to Tina Miller from Walkabout Outfitters. Tina, are you on the line?
I am.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Trying to hang in there.
Thank goodness.
Well.
We love your shops. I see you on the Roanoke Market. I see you in Richmond. I see you in, of course, I see you in Lexington, where we both went to high school together. But I understand you got approved for PPP.
We did get approved for PPP. Thankfully, it truly is a lifeline for us.
Good, good. Well, and I understand you got a question about moving forward.
Correct. So my question about the PPP is, you know, there's rumors, of course, there's rumors with everything, but that there, you know, hopefully is going to be some additional funding put in that and possibly a new rendition. It might just be that there's additional funding put in it, but it might be a new rendition. If it's a new rendition with, let's say, better features, if you will, for example, like extending the 8-week period to get employees back to work or something like that, or maybe it's longer than 2 years to pay it back if you've got to pay part of that loan back. Will those new features of a new rendition, and you might not even know the answer to this, be retroactive to those who got the PPP in the first go-around?
That is a very good question. It is likely that we'll be not only improving the amount of money that gets invested into PPP so that more is available for more small businesses, but we will be making some improvements to the program itself, and that may come directly from the administration as opposed to Congress. It's less likely we'll include changes in the legislation itself. We may just see that the administration tries to continue to make the program work. My guess is, and Mr. Knobloch is probably going to have a better insight into this, as they make changes or improvements to the program, are those changes going to be, hopefully most of them will be available to existing users, but Carl, do you have some insight into that?
That's a good, excellent question. I know it's been brought up by a lot of businesses as we've moved forward. The one thing I can tell you about the document that was between Treasury and SBA as this process continued, things were continuously changing through this process. I'm hoping with just like the question you brought up about, you know, making potentially extending the 8 weeks, extending the 2 years. Those are actually don't let the 8 week clock start until employment. We open our doors again. All those type of things have floated around. Those are things that can happen at the Treasury and SBA level. They're the ones that would have to make those adjustments at that point so the lenders understood the ground rules, how it's being implemented. So do not know if those discussions are going on at this point in time, but if the Congress is being notified by their constituents, I know that it's being communicated to Treasury and SBA.
Okay. Well, so it sounds like it's a stay tuned type of answer, but that it's more than likely that if we can make the PPP work better, we're not just going to make it work for folks who are in the second round of funding. We're going to make it work for all existing users as well. That'd be my goal, and I'll do my best to relay that to the administration as I'm in conversations with them. Let's go ahead to Tom McLeod has a question about EIDL. Tom, are you on the line?
It's John McLeod. Yeah, I'm on the phone, Ben.
John, it's good that I was looking at the screen thinking I know a John, but I don't know a Tom.
I must have slurred my language, but it's John. But, yeah, my question is about the EIDLs. I understand the PPP has been temporarily suspended until Congress acts. But the EIDL, I understood that was not, since it's a loan, it wasn't tied to a particular cap. I read several things that the SBA said the SBA is suspending applications from EIDL. So I was hoping Mr. Knobloch could provide some feedback on that.
All right. Thanks. Carl?
Thank you. Yes, it's not that it's really suspended. The disaster program is also dependent on Congress for allocation of funds because that's a direct loan program from the government. And so not only happen to deal with the coronavirus, we also have to deal with all the other disasters that are going on throughout the country, whether those be floods, tornadoes, and that. Those are still ongoing, and we also have to address those through this process. So we go to Congress and ask for an allocation of funds, and that's given to us. And basically, that pool of funds, if it's used up, it's gone. And unfortunately, that's what's happened. The funds are all gone at this point. Does that mean what's sitting in the queue is not going to be given or it's dead in the water? No, it's just waiting until the funds get put back into SBA, and then those packages that were submitted in that will move forward. The other thing that's been confusion through this whole process is there was a large group who went after the up to 10,000, and that's all they went for, because they were going to go after the payroll protection. Then there's this other smaller sector who went after the true loan, the economic injury disaster loan, which is at the 3.75% interest over 30 years to pay back and up to $2 million. And there was communications about that there would only be 15,000 given out for like 2 months' time to people because of fund issues. That was pulled off the table. It was it was discussed, but it was decided that would not be used, that they would just still fulfill the people's loan all the way out at that point.
And so Carl, was there a change made in terms of the $10,000 advance? Because I know at the beginning the $10,000 was kind of a set amount that you could request, and then as the program became more and more popular, Treasury kind of shifted to an up to 10,000 depending on your the number of employees. And is that a new wrinkle to the program, or is that something that's always been there?
From the beginning, when we were communicated with, it was always up to. So, you know, I heard, you know, discussion 10,000, And I thought, okay, I get it, and I see how some businesses will this will be advantage for. And then when it when we were trained on it and that for purposes of giving the webinars and things like that, it was up to 10,000. So and that's the way we communicated from our end. But I know there was a lot of confusion with that. And like I said, there was not a lot of clarity with that. We tried at our local level to always make sure that people understood that and understood how the formula worked for it. But I know that really did not come to light until at the very end, last week, really, did the lamplight start shining on that.
Okay. Now, I know that there are several people who want to ask, who have applied and are waiting to see if they've been approved. We've got a gentleman named William Deal who runs the Buckhorn out in Churchville. Mr. Deal, are you on the phone?
I am.
How are you
Thank
doing
you.
Today?
Good. How about you?
I'm all right. Did you apply for EIDL?
I did on March 30th, and I've never heard anything, and I've called multiple times.
Okay. Carl, what is the best way for applicants who haven't heard back to find out? I mean, we can get on the phone in my office. If folks don't get to ask a question, and Mr. Deal will go ahead and inquire on your behalf as well, but if folks don't get to ask the question and relay that information by the end of this call, leave a message. We will inquire for you. But Carl, is there a place they can go to try and check on the status of their application?
I mean, it's an excellent question. I can't tell you how many phone calls I just have related to this one. The first problem with this is when the disaster website, when it crashed early on, when they tried to rebuild it quickly, and at that point, that's when they added the up to 10,000, because before that, they did not have it. So when they rebuilt the website, there used to be a tool on there where you could put in your number, and you could see where it stood status-wise. Unfortunately, that tool wasn't rebuilt just to get things moving. And so what it did, it created a large hole. And then with people trying to contact the hotline, the 800-659-2955, or going to disaster customer service at sba.gov, a lot of people got frustrated, which I totally understand. It's been poor customer service on our part because they can't get answers. And unfortunately, there's still no answers. All I can tell people is if you have an application number or a confirmation number, you're in the system. It's going out first come, first serve. The first ones were done on the 26th of March for the up to 10,000. And that they're rolling out, and we're into 10 days since they first started rolling out. I don't know how many are rolling out a day. These are questions we've asked at the local level that has not been communicated to us. So as I tell people, we're not able to see anything because it's a totally separate program from us, and we're not in that system because it's unique to disaster. So we're kind of in the same boat as constituents. All we can do is try to push things up. We've made our leadership aware of it. They're well aware of it. But once again, it's still a disaster. It has to do that communication out with it.
Okay. So definitely, if you've gotten a confirmation number on your application, stick with it. You're going to get an answer. We're sorry that that the number of applicants has overwhelmed the system, and they're doing their best to get an answer back to all the people who have applied. I know that Catherine Beard is on the line from Roanoke with a question about how the money from PPP can be used. Catherine, are you on the line?
I am. Dan. Hi, Dan. Hi, everybody.
Doing well. Good to talk to you. Thank you for being on the call today. What can we help you with one of your questions?
Well, we've applied and we were accepted, and I'm super thankful for that, and the bank that I work with was amazing. So thank you to everybody with that. But I've heard some different things about how the money can be applied, and I just want to get rid of the myths so that I have a better understanding. First, someone told me that 70% of the money has to be used for payroll, and my understanding was it could be used for payroll or mortgage or utilities or loan interest and so forth, and I just wondered, is there a percentage that has to be done for payroll? And then with that, we are trying to come up with some Zoom activities and some online learning things, and if I have an employee who does not want to participate in that, am I obligated to pay all of the employees or just the ones that are honestly making an effort to do things to do good time for learning?
Well, thank you for those questions, Catherine. I know I'm glad to hear you guys are at the spa are operating. I know that Mr. Knobloch will be able to help fill in some gaps here if I get this wrong, but the loan will be fully forgiven if the funds are used for payroll costs, interest on mortgages, rent, and or utilities. But due to the high subscription rate, at least 75% of the forgiven amount must have been used for payroll. So it's not a question of whether you can use the funds for something other than payroll. It's a question of whether those funds will be forgiven at the end of the day. And I know that those rules are still being worked out, and there are some on the line who do have questions about loan forgiveness, the rules that are being promulgated. So, Kent, do you have some details on that you can share?
The one is, yes, you're absolutely right, Congressman. It's 75% is for the payroll aspect. The remaining 25% could be used for utilities, the rent, or the interest on the mortgage. That's how your breakdown would have to look. The other thing is that one of the big challenges, a lot of people are asking about the loan forgiveness. And the one thing is it's still in reality being developed because we technically got 8 weeks before the product's due. So they're working on this guideline. The one thing I tell everyone is if you were accepted with the paperwork you submitted in the first round, you know, to get the approval, that's the same type of paperwork you should give in the second half, except you should show, you know, the bill that was paid for utilities, if that's what it was used for or what it was used for the mortgage and that. That's all you're doing. At that point, it's don't change anything that you submit the first round. It's not to add extra things. Yes, you will have to make a request for the to be relieved debt, and that template is being developed right now. So that will be submitted along with your information, like the payroll information and that, to the lending institution to process, and then pretty much the lending institution will have approximately 60 days to go through the process to work through things to finalize it out and submit it forward so SBA will pay the loan off and to the lender directly.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that answer. And as people who are on the line have questions, dial *3 to ask a question and dial *6 to sign up for the newsletter. The first poll question, are federal and state leaders doing enough to publicize resources that are currently available to help small businesses through this difficult time? If you think yes, press 1. If you think no, press 2. We've gotten a couple of online questions, and I want to bring in the good Delegate Runyon, who's on the phone with us. There's been a lot going on down in Richmond. I know you all are going back for a reconvened session to consider either the governor's recommendations on certain bills. He's made several related to economic situation here in the Commonwealth, but also there are some questions related to getting Virginia back to work. And the governor has delayed some of the stay-at-home windows or extended some of those windows beyond his original plan. I know there are a lot of people who are anxious to get back to work, open up their businesses. There are some businesses that currently are deemed non-essential that probably could operate with maintaining certain distances and things like that. So hopefully we're going to see some modifications of those rules. But, Delegate, can you kind of give us an update on where things are at the state level?
Yes, sir. Thank you. So you all are aware that the governor extended the original business restriction order for two additional weeks. And then I think he set down some markers of when we can start implementing business reopening back to normal, and that has to do with number of cases as we move forward. I do know the last conversation that we had as elected representatives, the conversation went along that we recognize that we need to return to business as normal. The governor and his staff and the administration is putting in plans to put that forward. And so we'll be having those conversations this week and next week. I will say that the governor and his staff has recognized the financial challenges that are out there. And so spending that can be cut is being cut. We're delaying an act. We're proposed to have various legislations enactments delay that will remove some of the burden on small businesses that, to be honest with you, this last session had. So I'm optimistic that we will continue to move forward in a positive way, in a collaborative way, and listening to the business community. I've had a number of constituents contact me that their businesses may have been impacted, and they think that perhaps overly restrictive by the government. We've reached out to various agencies and the administration and started that conversation to see how we can move some things forward. Some areas we've been successful with, some we have not. But what I would encourage all those listening today, and really all of our constituents, is reach out to your elected officials. Explain your circumstances, explain what you think would be a good solution, and then we'll bring those forward. And we continue to work with people in the administration to try and make adjustments to this so that we can all get back to where life is normal.
I appreciate that, Chris. And I think one of the things that the state is trying to do, as the federal government's trying to do, is as we go through this crisis, we're trying to do no harm to businesses. We're trying to not only extend a lifeline to them through these programs, but we also want to avoid policies that somehow make it even harder for them to stay open. And I know the governor has recognized that some of the proposals that are out there would harm small businesses in Virginia. Most notably, the mandated increase in the minimum wage, he's amended that to delay the effective date. Are there other bills that he has put a delayed effective date on, and is that something that we're looking at?
There are. I think it's over 150 bills that we're addressing. Many of them have those delayed enactment dates. But to be frank about it, that's not a uniform position by all elected officials in the Commonwealth, unfortunately. And so, again, what I would encourage to be done is our constituents write to the governor, write to the other leadership in the General Assembly and say, I need these bills removed or changed or delayed enactment because I cannot continue in the direction that we are.
All right. Well, I appreciate that definitely. We've gotten some interesting questions and some folks online who are sole proprietors and are curious as to whether they qualify for the PPP. Keith Bly, who runs a bookkeeping practice in Broadway, has that question. Keith, are you on the phone?
I am.
Keith, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay.
Keith, did I get your question just about right?
You did. I'm a sole proprietor, and I have three employees, which I pay on my payroll. But I myself am not on payroll, as the case that quite a few of us sole proprietors are like that, unless we get into technical stuff like S-chapter corporations or corporations, that kind of thing, we'll put ourselves on payroll. But ordinarily, we don't put ourselves on payroll. When we file our tax return, we use a Schedule C, and whatever, if there's a profit or loss, then that's our income or otherwise. So we're not on payroll, but does that exclude us from being included in some of the stimulus amounts that are available? And I also have a second question having to do with utilities, definition of utilities, what that includes.
Okay. Carl, are you able to answer those questions?
Yeah, on the Schedule C that you're talking about on your Block 31, your net worth, that's what they kind of look at for your salary. And that's came out late in about the middle of last week, where they had that conversation relating to that for the sole proprietors concerning that matter. With it, when you talk about utilities, you know, people have given examples, and what I've done is it depends on your industry. So let me give you an example. Somebody that drives a truck, okay, their utility is the fuel for the truck. That's how that's looked at. So it really depends on industry sector. And if it's something that's common to all sectors, not something that's just unique to an individual, it's common to the sector for that to be a common use of utilities for that whole sector.
Okay. Hope that that answers that question. We have closed the poll on the first poll question, whether or not federal and state leaders are doing enough to publicize the resources that are currently available to help small businesses. Right now, it ended up being about 53% said yes, 47% said no. So we've got some work to do to get those get that information out there to small businesses, make sure they understand exactly what they need to do to get to be able to access those resources. My website, klein.house.gov, I've got a separate COVID page, a COVID-19 page that will have all of that information and links to the SBA as well. We did have some questions about a second round. Mr. Bacchus up in Mount Sydney has a question about second round of PPP. Mr. Bacchus, are you still on the phone? He might have dropped off the phone. Well, let's see. We've got another one with a question about a second round. Mr. Knobloch, as we do a second round, the idea that when do you anticipate promulgating rules for the loan forgiveness portion of the PPP?
So those guidelines, you know, I tell people that in all likelihood that generally maybe 4 weeks down the line before you actually see what the actual official paperwork is. And that's why I've tried to stress to everyone, the initial paperwork you gave to the lending institution, if they accepted that, that's the same paperwork you should use at when you ask for loan forgiveness. But that template, that standard formatted letter or whatever they come up with will be done about that time, so everybody can see it, and the lenders will have time to review it so they understand how it's going to work as people submit their material.
All right. Let's see. The I see now that that was Aaron Ludwig with Jack Brown's in Harrisonburg who had that question. Aaron, are you on the phone?
I am. I am. How you doing?
I'm good. Got one of my favorite places there in Harrisonburg. Where Mr. Knobloch was just talking about the forgiveness portion, and we kind of did this where the answer got in front of the question. But can you restate your question if it wasn't answered by Carl?
Yeah. And it was definitely along those lines, and I think a lot of it more had to do with the paperwork, because what we're running into right now, and this is just when you tie it in with the unemployment piece, which was a very great gesture by the feds to offer the $600 bonus to all the unemployment folks. And we've been running into an issue now where, we only had to lay off about four people out of our locations downtown. But what we did is just lowered hours for everybody. But now as we still try to keep their money coming in, and we're trying to keep them around 20 hours, but the second they go over 20 hours, their unemployment starts dropping, and they're not living it within, we're trying to make them as comfortable as possible. So I'm trying to get creative, and I'm going to try to spend as much of this PPP money as I can to get the forgivable amount, as well as to take care of all my people the best I can. But it's not going to be normal payroll. I'm going to be paying these folks probably, higher amount of money to go through this. And that's what I wasn't sure about when this comes down to the forgivable amount. I don't want it. Will it be red flagged if I change the way I pay my people so I can get them up to a comfortable level of living, but it's different from how I'm paying them right now? So I just wasn't sure what the SBA would be looking at when it comes down to the forgiveness piece.
But
Carl, you got anything to add on that?
The critical piece here, and I'm just going to state it, is that they're looking at what you did last year in 19, if that's what you have for your numbers, for payroll, your average. And that's pretty close to what they're expecting. If you decide to pay them more than that, you can't necessarily use the payroll program for that payroll aspect to pay more money, because it's being based on what the average was for the previous year, because they figured your numbers have dropped, and so that's what they're using as the standard benchmark. So increasing would be a business decision on your part, but that wouldn't really be the money from the payroll protection to be used for the revenue difference from what the average was last year. You couldn't use it for that.
Thank you for that answer, and hopefully that's helpful. Chris, one of the things that I know that Richmond is discussing as they go back on Wednesday is going to be the budget. In addition to delaying the vote on whether or not to delay the minimum wage increase, and I'm trying to remember how far out they wanted to delay it. Maybe you can remind us, but there is a question about whether we are going to provide additional aid in a second round for states, and I think you may want to talk a bit about all the work that's being done in your budget process to address this crisis from a healthcare perspective, hospital aid and coverage as well. Can you talk about all the different aspects of the budget that are being impacted by this crisis?
Well, it is actually significant. We spent about an hour and a half this morning with staff going through the recommendations that are being made. And so a significant amount of money in general, any spending that can be pulled back is being pulled back. And then it's focused on a number of different areas relating to providing health care for our community, whether it is for the disability community to offer increased wages so that they can have people continue to come into the homes and provide the care necessary. There's additional monies being addressed to the long-term care facilities and a study to be undertaken to see what areas can be improved on that. We know that there's been a number of challenges in that area. Relating to the minimum wage increase, the specific number is it was supposed to go into effect in January. it's being proposed to be deferred until May of 2021. So that'll certainly help take some of the pressure off our small business community on that. So the other things that I think are important relating to providing healthcare facilities or healthcare is an emphasis on providing PPE equipment, and the state is continually to focus on that so that we know that our hospital and healthcare providers throughout the Commonwealth have adequate facilities. In addition to that, there was one area that I thought was important. One new thing, the hospital community has developed a plan to be able to provide more services than they currently are allowed to. Right now, we've had a deferral of other services other than non-emergency services, and it's impacted people's lives in our communities. And the hospitals have been able to work out a program that would allow those procedures to be undertaken. And the concern is that people have deferred healthcare items that maybe are not of an emergency nature, but they are things that are going to ultimately impact their health long term. So the medical community has put forth a plan. I hope the administration is willing to have those conversations and look at how to do that, and so that we again can get people back to how their lives would be in a normal fashion.
Great. I know we've got a couple of farmers on the line. Let's hear from one of them. Kyle Leonard from Spotswood Colbell Farms is curious about the loan forgiveness portion and how you determine whether a business has been negatively impacted. Kyle, are you on the phone?
Yes, sir, I am.
How are you doing this afternoon?
Very well.
Good.
I appreciate all y'all's work you've been doing, and I will say that these programs are most definitely a lifeline to all small businesses. And as a farmer, I feel like, you know, we are a vital small business as well. So we thank you for your help.
Absolutely. I know that the Ag Department just announced a $19 billion food assistance program. $16 billion in direct payments to farmers and ranchers, and $3 billion in purchases of agriculture products, including meat, dairy, and produce to support producers and provide food to those in need. So I'm hoping that those will help. Carl, can you go to his point about how you actually measure the impact of coronavirus on your business? Is this type of thing where you're just comparing 20 to 19, or how does he accomplish that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a typically almost everyone in 2019 had positive year, and so when the coronavirus kicked in officially in February 15th as disaster point that it was recognized here in the United States, it was kind of like, okay, let me compare last year in this time frame, February, March, and was I impacted by it? Almost everybody was. Now, some people won't see their impact until the summer season because at that point, that's when they actually go into active mode. So even though it's February, March, they're going to see the effect when their season kicks in, especially a lot of summer activities and that. So everybody can identify, just like farmers, depending, you know, if they're growing and selling to restaurants and or farmers markets or anything like that, they're impacted because the doors are closed. If they're sitting here and having where people come and visit their farm, they're impacted. If they're having where they're having to delay not being able to plant as much acreage as they originally planned because they know their demand's going to be down, or they were growing a seasonal crop that basically it's going to be too late to put into the ground that they can salvage it. It's a direct impact. There's lots of ways just to say you were impacted by Corona. And it's really rare right now that literally anybody in the country has not been impacted by the coronavirus. Everybody's had a trickle effect one way or another. Just like you trying to, as a farmer, you ordered equipment, and the equipment's being delayed because of the coronavirus. It's impacted you. So it's all these different dynamics that are going on that can create that trickle effect.
Gotcha. And just for those who are still waiting, we're trying to get to your questions. We've got about 5 to 10 more minutes to go. Dial *3 if you'd like to ask a question, and dial *6 to sign up for the e-newsletter. Let's see. We've got several people who are asking about the delays in their application. Linda Leach, Ingleside Dairy Farm, is one of them, and I see some others waiting in the queue who have applied and are waiting to hear. Linda, is that my understanding of your status at this point?
Yes, it is. We submitted our application to the local bank on April the 3rd, which was the first day that we could submit. They got our application. They only had one question. We responded within 10 minutes, and then were notified that, you know, they were out of money. What we need is reassurance that the program will be refunded. Is there anything that we as a small business owner can do or anything that we need to do to help see this process through? It seems that there's been quite a bit of disparity between the banks that are administering the program. Which bank you went to, it seems, determines whether you got approved and got the money from the PPP program. It's certainly a great program. It's desperately needed. It's helpful. And it's something that, in a sense, we're banking on. We're looking for reassurance.
Right. That's right. And we got some good signals yesterday. I was on a conference call yesterday with the conference that indicated we are close to an agreement between the administration and the House leadership and the Senate leadership to provide additional funds. Our goal was to target that money for small businesses, and others, including House leadership, really wanted to add additional funds for other programs for other entities. State and local governments being some of those. The outlines of the deal that are coming into focus indicate around an additional $300 billion for the PPP, of which $60 billion is going to be reserved for two groups, $30 billion for institutions worth $50 billion and under, and $30 billion for institutions worth under $10 billion. An additional $50 billion for EIDL program, $10 billion for disaster grants, $75 billion for hospitals, and $25 billion for additional testing. So it is being targeted, and that's a good thing. I know that there are a lot of needs out there, but the top priority, especially for this program, is to keep the liquidity in the markets, keep the small businesses operating, keep people on payroll. So I do feel positive that there is going to be a deal reached to provide a second round of funding specific to you, Linda. I think the USDA program, where you're going to see an additional $16 billion in direct payments to farmers and ranchers, including those in livestock, row crop producers, specialty crop producers, and other crops, are going to be made, and then you're going to see an additional $3 billion in purchase of ag products, including meat, dairy, and produce to support producers and provide food to those in need. So hopefully that ag department program is going to help as well, but we stand ready to help regardless of which program it is to help small businesses out there. And for those who didn't make it through this first round, and sometimes the banks, the smaller lenders had some challenges getting up to speed, and some of the larger lenders even had some difficulty because institutions like Wells Fargo, because of their history, had some limitations on their ability to lend in the beginning, and so they weren't able to participate to the degree that they were hoping. Carl, do you have anything to add on that point?
Yes, Congressman, thank you. I want to point out something. A lot of confusion was created because they thought we were referenced a lot that we were the people that were preventing those payroll protection plans going through. Please understand the process is the lender reviews. If the lender says it's good, they fill out on a computer into our ETRAN system, and that's what's called ETRAN. That goes in. All we do at our end is we generate the number. The number at that point allocates the money, so it's set. So when they say SBA is a holdup, that's the only place the holdup is if the system's broken down, which it did break down a couple of times. But overall, it's the lender who's making the decision, yay or nay. If they hold the paperwork, that's a business decision they've made that has nothing to do with SBA. And I want that to be very clear that in this program, it is the lenders who are controlling it. All we're doing is generating a number.
And that's a good point to make. And I think there's it's also important to note that some of the questions out there having to do with medium-sized businesses, there's a specific lending program that is being created by the Federal Reserve called the Main Street Lending Program that comment period ended April 16th. So we're still watching to see how this is going to develop. We're interested in making sure that we're not just helping the very biggest and the very smallest, but that a lot of those important businesses for our community with several hundred employees right here in the 6th District in the Shenandoah Valley, Roanoke Valley, are able to access help as well. So we're going to watch that, continue to monitor that, and hopefully it will prove to be a helpful program. If you have not gotten asked a question yet, please stay on the line because after this call ends, you're going to have the opportunity to leave your message in the form of a question. We will get back to each and every one of you. I want to make sure folks with questions get those answered. My district offices are in Harrisonburg, Stanton, Roanoke, and Lynchburg. They're open. They're continuing to serve the people of the 6th District during this crisis. Please don't hesitate to call any of the offices with questions. If you need help navigating the federal bureaucracy as you work to secure these resources for your businesses, you can go to klein.house.gov, and that's where you can get all the phone numbers for all the offices. We're here to help. I want to thank Mr. Knobloch and Delegate Runyon for joining me today. I really appreciate your time and insight on the matter, and I want to thank each and every one of you out there for participating on the call. As your representative, I'm going to continue to make myself available as we navigate through these uncertain times. Teletown halls are not as much fun as these live in-person town hall meetings that I have across the district. I've had a couple dozen of these in-person town hall meetings, and those are a great way for folks to share their views. These are, as I say, a little more impersonal, but they're the best way right now for us to get that information out there, get your questions answered, and to hear from you about where we should be headed in the future. So, again, if you didn't get to ask a question, stay on the line, and they're going to come on the phone for you to leave a message. Make sure you leave your name, phone number, and your email address, and we'll get you a written response. And remember, we're going to get through this together. Americans have always accomplished great things in the past when challenged. This situation is no different. Our communities may be shaken, but there's no feat that the people of the United States can't overcome together. So stay safe, stay healthy, and God bless. Thanks so much.